Good evening, the time being 5:30. We will open the meeting. My name is Paula Reet, I'm the Mayor of Kingborough, and it's my pleasure to welcome you all to tonight's meeting on Monday the 15th of November 2021. We don't have anyone in the public gallery tonight, but I'm sure there'll be some people watching the live stream from home via YouTube. It's 5:30pm and I now officially declare this meeting open. And I wish to advise that council meetings are recorded and made publicly available on our website. In accordance with council's policy, I will ask the acting general manager if the recording is on.
Yes, it is.
It is. Thank you. I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, pay respects to elders past and present, and acknowledge today's Aboriginal community. Attendees this evening are myself, Councillor Reet, Deputy Mayor Councillor Westwood, Councillor Bastone, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Fox, Councillor Gladewright, Councillor Midgley, Councillor Street and Councillor Wass. From our staff this evening we have the Acting General Manager, Dr Stevenson, the Chief Financial Officer, Mr Breen, the Director of Engineering Services, Mr Reeve, the Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services, Mr Smee, our Media and Communications Advisor, Ms Adams, and the Executive Assistant, Mrs Morton. We have apologies this evening from Councillor Grace. On page one, we have the confirmation of the minutes, that the minutes of the open session of Council Meeting number 22 held on the 1st of November 2021 be confirmed as a true record. Do I have a mover? I do, in Councillor Fox, and a seconder in Councillor Gladewright. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Workshops held since the last council meeting. We had a workshop on the 9th of November in relation to the playground program and Kingston Main Street design. Turning to page two now and declarations of interest. Does any councillor have a declaration of interest they would like to declare? Councillor Cordova.
I have a declaration for a closed session item.
Thank you. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a declaration, a perceived conflict in regards to the notice of motion at item 16. And I will be leaving the room.
Thank you very much. If there are no further ones... Oh, sorry, Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. Declare a conflict of interest in item 15.5, nominations for community representation on the Kingborough Community Safety Committee, and I will leave the room.
Thank you, Councillor Street. Are there any other further ones? Thank you, councillors. Transfer of agenda items. Is there any item on the agenda that councillors would like transferred from open into closed or from closed session into open session? No? Thank you. There are no members of the public here to ask questions without notice. There was one question on notice from the public, a question in relation to Kingston Beach from Mr Roger Tong and an officer's response from Mr Reeve. Questions without notice from councillors. Does any councillor wish to ask a question without notice? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. My first question is about recycling at the Kingston Twin Ovals. What are the current provisions for recycling at the Twin Ovals, and what is the council doing to ensure that materials such as bottles, cans and cups, which should be recycled, what are we doing to make sure that they're not simply being discarded into landfill?
Mr Reeve. Oh no, Mr Smee. Nice handball.
Through you, Mayor, Council has in place lease agreements with the two lead tenants that make reference to the requirement for recycling. Both those tenants have recycling bins available for use at the Twin Ovals, and they do indeed use them. However, Council doesn't actively monitor that, so I can't answer the question other than to say that the provisions are in place.
Thank you. Just a quick follow-up to that. Do we have any plans to start monitoring that to make sure that there is compliance, and if not, why not?
Mr Smee.
Through you, Mayor, no, we don't, and the reason would be one of resourcing. You know, all of our sporting clubs have in place a similar arrangement, and the majority of their usage occurs on weekends and out of hours, and for council to be able to monitor compliance is just beyond us in terms of resourcing.
Thank you. Councillor Cordover.
Thank you. Through you, Mayor. I've got three questions about that in your report and two about Mayor's communications. Is now a good time?
Yep.
So starting with the annual report, on page 25 of the annual report, which is page 117 in our agenda, item 1.4.2 says, quote, the progress on the development of an alternative energy precinct at the Beretta waste disposal site is on target. Can we please hear briefly about how it's on target?
Acting General Manager, please.
Through you, Mayor. We are continuing to have discussions in relation to solar at Beretta. We're continuing to monitor and undertake the gas... Excuse me, it's not my area, but gas... flaring, thank you. And we're currently doing some work around carbon credit application because the federal government have extended the period under which we might be able to capture the gas flaring through the carbon credit program.
Thank you. My second question about the annual report is this time on page 120 of our agenda, page 28 of the annual report, 3.1.2. And this one's about review the Health and Environmental Services bylaw to ensure that the regulations provide appropriate protection for the natural environment. And I believe it also says on target. Can we briefly hear how this relates to the proposed new tree bylaw and when that new tree bylaw will come before the council?
Acting General Manager.
Through you, Mayor. I might have to take this on notice or look to Mr. Smee on the timeframes.
Through the Chair, the reference to in the annual report refers to the fact that the environmental bylaw has indeed been reviewed. The timeframe for the tree bylaw is yet to be determined. We're certainly doing a lot of work on it at officer level, but as you'd be aware, you know, there are processes that need to go through and time frames, some of which are beyond our control, that relates to the review by DPAC. So I'm reticent to put a time frame on it, given our lack of control over those time frames.
Thank you for that. And my final question on the annual report is also on the same page, this time item 3.3.1. It says that we are on target to improve recycling rates, reduce emissions and energy usage, and reduce the impacts of illegal dumping and littering. My question is there any publicly available data that the council is producing or information that actually shows the rates of improvement in recycling, the amount of emissions that have been reduced or the emission reductions achieved, and the reduction in energy usage? Are there any metrics relating to reductions in illegal dumping or littering either?
I can see Mr. Reeve's mind ticking over, and I can tell he has an answer for that. Mr. Reeve.
Thank you, Mayor. I guess I can answer part of the question there. So certainly from the recycling point of view, from the bits that are actually under council's control there, we do try and endeavour to provide that information back to councillors via our regular reports back from Kingborough Waste Services, and that gives a good idea of how much we're actually diverting from landfill, for example, which includes both our household collection and also what actually comes into Beretta as well at the same time. There is a power of work that's actually happening in other spaces as well from the state arena, particularly in the littering side of things there. So a lot of that's going to be tied up with the container reuse scheme as well. So that will actually go a great deal towards actually trying to manage that problem. And we obviously keep some stats in terms of where we're involved with various different cleanups of various different areas for our normal maintenance program, and where we might also be participating with other partners on cleanups as well at the same time. In terms of the emissions side of things, there's certainly we do have some data that sits in that area as well at the same time there. So we do collect information in terms of the gas flaring and so forth at Beretta there. We also do a lot of work on the general admissions
throughout council there with our various initiatives as well. So that's the sort of information that will periodically come back to council as well at the same time. So I partly answered your question there, and maybe the other aspects of it there might need to take on notice.
Thanks very much. Through you, Mayor, if you're happy to ask for me to do two more. So this one's about the Mayor's communications, the October 11th meeting with the Callis Group and GM Property. Just interested in more information about what that meeting was in regards to.
So that was in relation to, of course, the development at Margate, and Mr. Kalis and Mr. Bygraves outlined to the Acting General Manager and myself their desire to move forward with that. There are a number of issues that need to be resolved prior to that happening, and we're working through. We subsequently asked them to provide some documentation to us. Then we've gone back to them. There are some financial matters that are still outstanding from some works that were undertaken a number of years ago. We're trying to resolve that, and then we'll be coming back to council for a decision moving forward.
Thank you, Mayor. And my final question is about the 20th of October meeting with Sujini Suma regarding multicultural issues. And my question is just what are some of those issues and what's council doing to facilitate or help?
So Sujini, I've known for a number of years, and I'm sure she's well known to many councillors. She's a great advocate for multicultural issues, and she's a long-term resident of Kingborough. And she met with the Acting General Manager and myself because she has a desire to see us establish a multicultural advisory council, a committee, and we did indicated to her that that was something that I was particularly open to, but we really needed to wait until we have our community engagement officer on board, and you may be aware that we've recently re-advertised for that position, and then we need to sort of put it into a pool of different initiatives that have been put to us. We don't have the resources at the moment within the community development team to expand it to include another advisory group, and there are some competing interests. So, we indicated to her once that position has been filled that we would have a further discussion.
Thank you. That's all, Mayor.
Thank you. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. A question about the Council's draft cycling strategy. We have had some communications from the Kingston Beach Golf Club about the path of the proposed cycleway that's gone out for consultation. I'm wondering if you could give us some assurances, or give the golf club some assurances, that there is no intention to take this land from them.
Thank you for the question. There was some, it appears, confusion when we put out the what is very much the draft cycling strategy for public consultation the week before last. And it does seem that there has been some alarm caused within the golf club that they communicated to their members. I have written directly to the club and assured them that what has been put out is a very high-level document that is out for exactly that stakeholder engagement and some feedback. We certainly are not in a situation where we would be. I think there was a suggestion of perhaps compulsory acquisition of some of their land. That is certainly not the case. I can reassure them of that. And if you look at some of the language in the document, it actually talked about investigating and consulting with landowners who might be impacted. And so really what we've got is a map that is quite aspirational and conceptual in terms of being able to look at a holistic strategy for Kingborough and being able to make some of the connections that we'd like to make between various parts of our community. So I haven't heard back from the golf club. I've emailed them, and I'm aware that the Acting General Manager has had some correspondence with them as well, but certainly we would welcome their feedback, and that was the purpose of actually putting this out, was to actually get feedback from a range of stakeholders, them included. Thank you. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Just following on from Councillor Westwood's questions in regards to the golf club, from my understanding, have staff actually had conversations in the past about perhaps in the future, as an idea, a walking track, cycling track at all through the golf club land? Because in my understanding, that has, over the years, maybe 10 years, there has been conversations with the Kingston Golf Club in regards to such a possible proposal or idea to investigate.
Yep. Mr. Smee, did you want to provide some information in relation to that, please?
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, we have had conversations with representatives from the golf club, including a meeting that did involve the president some 5 or 6 weeks ago now. So there has been certainly conversations around the concept, and certainly those conversations indicated that it would be a matter that would require more in-depth investigation and consultation in a collaborative sense.
Thank you. Any further questions on notice? Without notice, I've actually got one. I guess mine will be to the Acting General Manager. Are staff aware of a service called the Australian Death Notification Service, which enables people to notify multiple organisations online about the death of a loved one? I think as many of us who've been through this, it's a very difficult time, and that there are a lot of different businesses and government departments that people need to notify. And I understand that this service is a free one, and I'm wondering, could Kingborough Council join the service which to assist streamlining the process for our residents?
Thank you for the question, Mayor. We are aware of this program and we're currently looking into it. At the moment, it's been initiated by the New South Wales Government on behalf of the Australian Government, so it's very New South Wales-centric, and there are not many Tasmanian utilities or councils on there, so we're just doing a bit of further exploration, but it does seem a reasonably simple process to take part. We just want to make sure that in doing so, there's absolute certainty that people using that service will trigger all the right local providers. So we're just investigating a little further.
Thank you. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a further question. Wondering if we have any FOGO bins at council locations such as the Civic Centre, the depot, the hub, or any high usage hall areas such as Blackmans Bay or Kingston Beach Hall?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. No, the only FOGO bins we have are the ones which are household collections, so we haven't extended FOGO out into the public arena, bearing in mind that we've only just started doing recycling in the public arena there, but I guess that will be something to be considered in the future.
Councillor Bastone.
Sorry. I was just wondering if we could get some idea of the status of the new public toilets that are going to be built in Woodbridge as part of the hall. If we get a timeline, please.
Mr. Smee, perhaps?
Through you, Mayor. We have a builder lined up, ready to go, and as soon as we get our building permit, we can get that builder started. But as yet, we don't have a building permit. So, I mean, I would imagine that we're talking probably 6 to 8 weeks to do the build, but we need the permit first.
And why are we still waiting for the permit? Have they not applied yet?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, we've yet to receive the final building plans to enable us to lodge an application for a permit.
Thank you.
Thank you. If there's no further questions, we'll go to questions on notice from councillors. On page 3, there are 3 questions. One from Councillor Bastone in relation to paid parking within Central Kingston, and an officer's response from Mr. Smee. We have a question in relation to the Huntingfield Park and Ride from Councillor Midgley, and an officer's response from Dr. Stevenson. And we have a question on notice from Councillor Bastone in relation to the Snug Hall with an officer's response from Mr. Smee. Turning to page 4, petitions still being actioned. There are no petitions still being actioned. Also on page 4, though, petitions received in the last period. There was a petition in relation to food van trading at Kingston Beach with a recommendation on page 4. Do I have a mover and a seconder for that, please? Moved by Councillor Wass, seconded by Councillor Fox. Councillor Wass.
Thank you, Mayor. I just support the recommendation, which is a typical and normal recommendation that we have.
Thank you. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you. A question in relation to this item. The recommendation is that the petition be received, which had 578 signatures, and referred to the appropriate department for a report to Council. How long is it anticipated that the report... How long before the report might come to Council? And given that something that's been addressed in the... something that's requesting to be addressed in the survey actually impacts the ability of food van permit holders to earn a living, how long might it be before the policy will be potentially reviewed?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. So the intention in... for the petition there is to provide a report book to Council, not for the next meeting but the one after, on the 20th of December there. And at that stage, I guess the opportunity will be for Council to consider that and whether there's any amendments they wish to make.
Thank you. So, through you, Mayor, just to clarify, that report will provide a way for councillors, if they so determined it was appropriate, to consider the change that the petition is asking to be made to policy.
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. Certainly the report intends to actually take a lot of the discussion that's actually been raised a number of times about this issue there and attempt to address that and also address what's been raised as part of the petition as well and provide some options for Council to consider with a recommendation at the end of it.
Thank you. So just to clarify, it will, at that point in time, we might be able to make a change to the actual policy, or will the recommendation just be that the policy be reviewed?
Mr. Reeve.
Through Mayor, certainly if it's a minor amendment, if that is to do with a trading location, I think that can be made as part of that process there. If it was to do with a more major amendment, then I'd be suggesting that the policy would come back before Council just to make that. But I suspect with what's been come up through the petition and what's come up through the other discussion there, that we're actually talking about a minor amendment that can be done at that time.
Thank you.
Any further comments, Councillor Wass? I'm assuming you don't want to sum up. Thank you. In that case, I'll put the recommendation as printed on page 4. It's moved by Councillor Wass and seconded by Councillor Fox. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Staying on page 4, we have the officers' reports to Council. Woodbridge Recreation Ground, draft master plan, engagement activity results, or the recommendation on page 8. Do I have a mover and a seconder, please? Councillor Bastone, seconded by Councillor Street. Councillor Bastone.
Thank you, Mayor. The purpose of this report is to present the results of the engagement activity undertaken in relation to the draft master plan for the Woodbridge Recreation Ground. And the background is printed here. There's further information for the background that was published in the agenda on the 6th of September, and I think it's a fairly self-explanatory report. They've been out to consult with a large number of residents. I must admit, not as many as for the other things that are happening within Woodbridge, but... part of the problem with the Woodbridge Oval at the moment in the area is a safety issue, and the recommendation is that the Grand Master Plan be noted and that the Council will continue to work with stakeholders to progress the design and implementation of the work in the proposals outlined in the Draft Master Plan, and that we will try and fund the works pursued through external sources, such as through a federal or state government grant. So this, we're hoping this will be a shovel-ready project that can be put up whenever there's some funding around.
Thank you, Councillor Bestone. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a small point on this. I noted there was no young people consulted for this. Do any comment to that as to why perhaps it's on page, you can see that one, when there's the graph of the age groups that were consulted, page 19. So there was none under 18 and sort of 18 to 24 was a very small amount too. I don't know, does that... I don't know if that makes a difference, or I'm just wondering if we need to talk to that age group.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, the results reflect the people who have responded. So I know within both those clubs there are young people, so those young people would have had the opportunity to respond if they wanted to, but clearly they've chosen not to. Again, this is a resourcing issue in terms of how we do our engagement, and this has primarily been done online, but with the support of the stakeholders to put it out to their members. But yeah, as I said, there would have been opportunities, it would have been promoted to young people, but perhaps didn't push their buttons to want to respond.
Thank you. Are there any further contributions? No, Councillor Bastone, did you want to sum up? Thank you. I'll put the motion as printed on page 8. It's moved by Councillor Bastone, seconded by Councillor Street. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Turning now to page 23, the Public Open Space Contribution Policy, with a recommendation on page 26. Do I have a mover and a seconder, please? Moved by Councillor Westwood, seconded by Councillor Street. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. The purpose of this report is to present the updated public open space contribution policy for council approval and implementation. The policy guides council's decision making in response to the relevant provisions of the Local Government Building and Miscellaneous Provisions Act. We have a policy with some tracked changes that is recommended for approval and implementation. I have a couple of questions. They relate to the two main changes to the policy. I was wondering if we could have some more detail around each of those changes. So the first change is that council will be able to apply credits where a proposed lot or lots in a subdivision will not create additional demand for public open space. I'm just wondering, what does that mean, council will be able to apply credits?
Dr. Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. It's a tricky bit of language, but essentially, because it is a credit, but it's essentially meaning we're just not applying the policy in certain situations. So it is a credit against what a theoretical open space contribution, and it's when there's no extra demand created. So when it's transferred for non-residential use, maybe for utilities or similar, or the primary lot where the existing house is not able to increase the number of people on the site, so there's no more development potential. So it doesn't happen very often, but there's a few small situations where it's nonsensical to apply the open space provisions. But because the open space provisions apply across the board, so you would leverage it and then credit it, so that they neutralise each other.
Okay, thank you. Then the second change, funds collected through the cash-in-lieu contributions will be able to be used for public open space projects outside the scope of the Kingborough Open Space Strategy if endorsed by council. This will allow for a greater deal of flexibility to apply funds where a new project has not been anticipated by the strategy. Is there some kind of something that guides what the projects outside the scope of the open space strategy might be? So could that be essentially anything that council decided it wanted to fund out of the public open space, or is there still some kind of constraint around it being public open space related?
Dr. Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. The idea is that it would still be public open space related, so it might support one of our other programs, such as playgrounds or Kingston Park, or it's hard to know what the future might be, but it would give council the potential then to contemplate using it. Open space funding for an open space project that hadn't been identified in the plan.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. Look, I just wanted to make a short comment on the policy and thank staff for the work that they've done updating it. One of the best things about this updated policy, in my view, is the guidelines around when council will take a public open space land contribution as opposed to a cash-in-lieu contribution. Certainly my hope that those clearer guidelines are going to prevent the situation that we've seen in the past where we've had some stranded land assets that haven't really been of any strategic benefit to council but have been taken as a public open space contribution, which never turned out to be a public open space contribution in effect because it could never be used for that purpose. So hopefully we get to a situation where we really are only acquiring land contributions where they serve a strategic benefit, and otherwise we're taking that cash contribution to better serve the public open space needs of our residents.
Thank you, Councillor Street. Councillor Gladright and then Councillor Bastone.
Thank you. I just had a question further to Councillor Westwood's question 4.1.4. The cash-in-lieu contributions, are they still going to be used in the general area, however, that that development has occurred, or does this allow for it to be used somewhere else?
Dr. Stevenson. Oops, someone needs to turn off their light.
Thank you, through you, Mayor. There's not currently a requirement to spend in the same place where the contribution is levied. It's a requirement to spend in relation to the open space strategy. So there isn't always absolutely direct relationship. But again, because there is provision to come back to council, if something new emerges that isn't in the open space strategy, council could contemplate the funding going towards that.
So if we're taking a cash and lieu contribution from a development that's happening in Taroona, but we're going to spend it down in Margate, is that fair to the Taroona residents?
Dr. Stevenson.
Probably getting out of my depth here. And I might. So my understanding is that the open space strategy articulates all the priority areas to ensure that equity of outcomes, looking at where the developments are occurring, etc. So that helps us prioritise, because it may be that there's already quite a lot of open space in Taroona or somewhere else. It doesn't make strategic sense to have that direct contribution in that space. So the open space strategy allows us to think strategically about where we already have open space and where we don't, and where we need it, and all the money goes into the pot and is allocated according to the strategy.
Okay, thank you.
I had Councillor Bastone next and then Councillor Fox.
Thank you. I just have a couple of questions on the wording. In procedure 5.1A, the council will require public open space contribution by way of either a maximum of 5% of the area of the land allocated as public open space. There's no definition of what that land is. It used to say the land being subdivided, and I'm just wondering why that was taken out, because there is no definition of what the land is that we have to put. They have to put 5% in.
Dr. Stevenson.
Because it relates to the local government building and miscellaneous provisions legislation, which is where we get the head of power to do this, it was felt it was superfluous to put it in our policy because it's got a legislative parameter through LOGBUM.
Right. And so it probably goes to the same The next one I wanted to ask about was, sorry, it's hard to read them. Five point five. The valuation is to take into account the potential of land for subdivision. The valuation is to take into account the risk of not obtaining a permit for subdivision. And this valuation money needs to be paid within 2 years and possibly before the subdivision is finished. So what happens if they pay more than what they need to, so that the land is not able to be subdivided as we originally thought it would be? And then when they come to subdivide it, they've already paid for it, if you know what I mean. I'm thinking in particular of somewhere like Kingston Green, where what they are able to do is different from what the original subdivision was.
Dr. Stevenson.
I don't think I'm able to answer that. I'd have to take it on notice. That's not substantially changed from previous policy, but I don't have that level of detail knowledge, sorry.
Okay. Because, okay.
Thank you. Councillor Fox was next.
I noted that in on page 25, one of the criteria or guidelines is that the land provides and or improves connectivities for pedestrian and cycles to other existing or prospective open space areas or public destinations. But that particular requirement is only covered by a line, which I did underline, which basically doesn't seem very strong. The land on page 30, fourth dot point down, the land provides or improves permeability through the site or surrounding area. And what concerns me is that that principle has not really been catered for adequately in terms of the sports centre, where we had the subdivision that occurred in the Whitewater area. There was even a representation to the tribunal that there be a linkage to the sports centre, and that linkage was not established at the time of the subdivision. There was public open space provided, but that was a critical link that, when I was the chairman of the bike committee, was seen to be absolutely critical for bike riders from the hunting field area to be able to communicate with the sports centre without having to go all the way down to Kingston and back up the hill, for example. And I'm just wondering whether this policy is strong enough in the wording to guarantee that that doesn't occur again, where we've got critical linkages that need to be maintained or provided for. And the line that the only line I can find is rather vague and not very strong. I was wondering if anyone could comment on that.
Dr. Stevenson.
I'll have a go. The difficulty is it is capped at 5%. Now, the decisions around that particular development before my time, but there were a number of competing public open space aspects, including the Whitewater Creek reserve and walkways and so forth. So in the end, there is a negotiation. My understanding with that one, there was a bit of a dispute and ultimately, but we are capped at 5%. So all we can do is do our best to negotiate an outcome that takes into account those particular priorities or take the cash in lieu. So it's not both, it's one or the other, and for that one, we now have the cash payment, don't we? That's yes.
Yes.
So you don't get two bites at the cherry. But perhaps with this clearer list of reasons why we would take open space over a cash in lieu contribution, you might prevent that situation. You've got a much clearer framework about the things that are important to council in considering whether we are prepared to take cash or whether we have the conversation about the land.
Yes, because that's a once-off opportunity quite often, and another example exists in Howden, where there was a large subdivision and they gave the cash in lieu, the negotiation failed, and the people negotiation were not at a high level. And I feel that is important, that when we get that situation where there is a linkage that is going to be lost forever, that negotiation be escalated to a higher level. But it's not written into this document.
But ultimately, council make the decision because it's part of the DA. Yeah.
I've got Councillor Bastone and then Councillor Cordova.
My question is relating to what Dr. Stevenson just said. In the policy detail, 5.3, it says this: if a subdivision contains land that is of strategic importance in providing for the open space needs of the community, and those needs can only be satisfied by requiring public open space to be provided in excess of 5% of the area in land in the plan of subdivision, council may require an additional area subject to the payment of compensation. So we can actually ask for more than 5%. Is that right?
Dr. Stevenson.
If we're prepared to pay for it.
Yes.
Thank you. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I've got a fair few questions, but I'd like to just thank staff for updating the policy, the level of detail that's been put into it. And I can see that a large amount of work has gone into it. So I guess my first question is, considering the complexity of the policy, was a workshop ever considered or an additional workshop considered to actually hash out any of this?
Not that I'm aware of.
No, we had an internal working group, a cross-departmental working group work on it. If a councillor wants to move to workshop it, we could do that. We were just mindful of the impending approach at the end of the year.
Of course. Thank you so much. And I guess I've got a few more questions, and it might elucidate whether or not I think a workshop should be necessary. Do you anticipate that the changes to this policy will bring increased revenue to council from public open space contributions, or will it decrease the revenue to council?
Dr. Stevenson.
I don't believe there's a clear revenue winner or loser. What it will do is mean that it provides us the opportunity to make more strategic decisions about whether we take the cash in lieu or the open space. So it's not necessarily about revenue as in the cash contribution. It's about better outcomes through that decision-making process. So sorry, I can't answer that clearly, but that's the rationale behind the changes.
That's okay, and that makes sense. Thank you so much. Through you, Mayor, has there been any analysis about the potential impact on revenue of these changes? So I understand that what the crux of the issue is about, but has there been any analysis of whether it will be better for council or worse for council?
I've got the feeling that Dr. Stevenson just answered that,
okay.
What she said.
I'm happy to.
Yeah, it's not something you can do because each development's got to be taken on its own merits within the broader strategic context of the decision making.
I understand. Thank you. And through you, Mayor, the scope of the current policy says at 4.1, quote, this policy applies to all properties in the Kingborough municipal area, but the proposed changes, so that's the current policy, but the proposed change removes this clause and replaces it with five separate items that appear to substantially narrow the circumstances in which a contribution of land or cash in lieu would apply. So my question, I guess, is my analysis correct that this narrows the scope? You know, the original policy said it applies to all properties, and now it says it only applies under these circumstances. Does it narrow the scope?
Dr. Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. It may on paper, but we did not have the head of power under Logbump to apply it to all properties. It can only apply in certain circumstances. So on paper, yes, but in practicality, no.
Okay, thank you. At 5.1 on page 25, it says, quote, so this is under the finance section of the report, it says that there will be no additional expenditure as a result of the proposed policy changes. And my question is, I think I already know the answer, does this factor in the lost income so that the opportunity cost of if we've changed the policy, fewer properties now apply and we lose money, the finance says there's no additional expenditure, but have we factored in the opportunity cost?
Through you, Mayor. I would just dispute there's a financial impact because if we take it as cash in lieu, we then spend it on open space. So we either have a need to take the open space because it's strategic, or we take the money to spend it on open space. So overall, I would say it's a cost-neutral proposition because you're still, it's still all about open space. I hope that makes sense.
Thank you. And okay, so I think one of the reasons why I think I probably do want to have a workshop on it is because I feel like we should be trying to figure out whether we'll get additional contributions or fewer contributions as a result of fiddling with the policy. Because at item 3.4 of the Kingborough Public Open Space Contribution Policy, so I'm looking at page 28, I went back and looked at the public open space strategy. My understanding is that the policy is supposed to help us implement the strategy. So if you read the strategy, it says, note, while an individual development may not expressly increase the demand on public open space or generate a need for public open space in the immediate area in all instances, it is considered that all development is liable for contribution in line with Kingborough's public open space contribution policy. So it feels to me like the public open space strategy itself says this should apply to all properties, but now we're doing a policy that says actually it's not going to apply to all policy, to all properties. Do the updates that we've made to this policy align with the strategy?
Dr. Stevenson.
These updates reflect what we actually have power to do and what we practically have been doing to a large extent. The main changes are to make it very clear that we will take cash instead of space unless you can demonstrate that the space is strategic space for us. So it's flipping it around. It's saying we're not just going to take what you give us, we will only take the space if it makes strategic sense in relation to all those things listed under 6.2, otherwise we will take cash. So, but in terms of the all development sort of language, this has been updated to reflect what we actually have the power to do.
Okay, thank you. And I think that alludes to what Councillor Street was talking about before, that we do indeed want to make sure that developers don't just give us bits of land that are totally useless for public open space. We want the land that helps our public open space strategy. That makes sense to me. That makes perfect sense to me. I'm concerned that the way that this is currently worded, we might be, because we're limiting the scope, I'm a little bit concerned still that we're going to end up losing income for the council. So my next, it's probably my final question before the substantive, through you, Mayor. On page 24, the report says that the main changes include public open space dedications guidelines, which at 4.1.6, the quote is, in addition to 4.1.5, a public open space land contribution will only be considered where one or more of the following apply, and that is that the land is identified in the open space strategy or subsequent versions. But that's what I was referring to before, that the open space strategy says that all development must apply. So my question is, what is the legislative head of power issue? Can you explain to us why there's a head of power issue there?
Dr. Stevenson.
Excuse you, through you, Mayor. The legislation that enables us to charge the public open space contribution is the Local Government Building and Miscellaneous Provisions. I would be happy to double check that that I'm right. I might just need to go and reread a couple of provisions in that legislation. But the officer working group that pulled this together, part of their remit was to ensure that we were not overstepping our head of power.
Okay.
And so they've made it more aligned with LogBump.
and with what has been the practice of council in that regard. But if you...
I've got actually one more question on it.
I can... Sure. I just need a minute, though, to have a look.
Okay.
Sure. So in the existing policy on with track changes, and this is page 27 of our agenda, the very first policy statement, 1.1, the very first bit at the end, the bit that we've removed, says part of the Kingborough Council is committed to conserve important cultural and natural environments, and we've crossed that bit out to conserve important cultural and natural environments. Later on in the objectives, we talk about environmental management, but my question is, why did we think that it was important to remove the commitment to conserve important cultural environments? And if this policy passes, what else do we have to protect important cultural environments?
Can you give me the reference where you're finding that again? It's, I can't follow
in the existing policy. So yep. It's on page 27 and it's the very first policy statement. So it's 1.1. I'll read the full thing. Kingborough Council is committed to providing sustainable areas of public open space for community use. Such open space should aim to increase public access to spaces, da da da. And then we've gotten rid of... So cultural environments could be things like, you know, architectural heritage or important buildings or religious buildings or, you know, cultural heritage is a very important thing. And my question is, if this policy doesn't protect it, apart from the Heritage Act, Aboriginal heritage, what are we doing to replace, why are we replacing it?
Mr. Smee will answer that one.
Thank you, Mayor. Through you, so I've been part of the working group that's looked at this, and I guess the reason for removing it is because the public open space policy provision, whilst it's acknowledged that cultural heritage is important and should be protected, the public open space mechanism is not meant to be the mechanism to do it. We have done it in the past and it's been to the detriment of recreational values, for example, and the changes to the policy aim to make it quite clear that we won't simply take a public open space contribution wholly and solely for the purpose of protecting cultural heritage, for example. There also needs to be a demonstration that it ticks the box in terms of public recreation, which is what the legislative requirement is for us to actually take it. Your question as to what other mechanisms do protect it is a good one, and it's one we asked around the table. And there are, of course, various other pieces of legislation, but if we focus specifically on our public open space contribution policy, it's the primary and indeed the statutory process is to focus on public recreation outcomes, not cultural heritage outcomes or other, you know, environmental values, etc.
Okay, thank you. That actually really satisfies that question. Why does it have to be a maximum of 5% and why not 10%? What's that based on? Is that a head of power issue as well?
That is prescribed under Logbump, as is the fact that it can only be applied to subdivisions. So that's in answer to your question about all development. Logbump, it specifically refers to all the way through the two... sections dealing with public open space refer to subdivision.
Okay, thank you. So to my substantive, very briefly, Mayor, and thank you for your indulgence thus far, for me, the crux of this issue is when do we take cash in lieu? That makes sense, what Councillor Street alluded to at the beginning. But we've had no opportunity to actually discuss the levels of contribution. I mean, should it be 1% rather than 5%? That's a question that, you know, we obviously have a head of power to do it, but this council has never had the opportunity to discuss. I personally think that it should be probably more than 5%, but it sounds like we don't have a head of power to do that. Ultimately, my guiding principle here is that this policy should optimally assist the implementation of the strategy, and I think to some extent it definitely does do that and clears up some problems, but the strategy seeks to provide more open space for a growing population, create better parks, sports and recreation facilities, improve the provision and diversity of sport and recreation facilities, and so on, you know, improve networks, involve the community, be environmentally sustainable. It's all good stuff. And to me, I think we also need to make sure that all developers pay their fair share. Because during a housing crisis, when we have, you know, very few renters' rights and we have families living in smaller and smaller spaces, public open space is more important than ever. And those lucky few who own land and are, you know, fiddling with the boundaries or subdividing, they should, I would hope that they would consider the role, the positive role that they can play helping the community and those who are less fortunate to have access to really great public open space in Kingra. At this stage, I'm not sufficiently confident that the changes that we're making don't have impacts on Kingra's ability to bring in public open space contributions. I'm clear about some aspects of it, and I want a broader ranging discussion about others, because I want, as Councillor Fox alluded to, some stronger provisions in place to make sure that to make sure that developers, where appropriate, pay their fair share. And I think it's such a complex issue that it probably warrants a workshop on it rather than, I mean, in essence, I've kind of had a go at having a workshop on the floor of the council chamber, and I apologise for that, but it's a really important area. I think that we're constraining the scope of this policy. We definitely are. We've heard that. And that will result potentially in the generation of fewer contributions, which will harm the goals as outlined by the strategy. And I read the strategy in preparation for this. I'd be happy to receive a further workshop on it. So I would like to move that we defer this until we can have a workshop.
Okay, it's a procedural matter. The question is that it be deferred. It's moved by Councillor Cordova. Do I have a seconder for that? There's no seconder for your deferral, so
that's
you'll
okay.
Have to go back to your substantive.
Thank you. Well, to conclude my contribution, I hope I've highlighted some of the various questions in what is a very dense and important policy, and I hope I've tried to paint a picture here that when we're in a time where there's the most number of developments that have ever taken place historically in Kingra, and we're also constantly saying how we want developers to pay their fair share, all of a sudden I'm worried that we're passing a policy here without having really teased out the various aspects of it. I'm worried that we're passing a policy that will constrain the scope and therefore reduce the contributions that we get, and so I'll be voting against this one. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Are there any further speakers? Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, all the fellow councillors who have spoken, and Councillor Cordova for very important questions and discussion. I'm wondering if staff have any feedback or input in regards to easing some of the worries, perhaps, that Councillor Cordova has raised.
I think Dr Stevenson has provided most of those answers.
Yes, I guess, like, thank you, through you, Mayor. Thank you, Councillor Midgley. I just wanted to reiterate that the main changes in this policy are actually about providing more clarification around the strategic rationale for when we would keep land as opposed to take a contribution. I don't believe it will have a significant financial impact on our open space fund, but where we do take the land, it will actually contribute to our open space objectives rather than when we take the land instead of money. I am happy, having refreshed myself with the relevant legislation, to confirm that a number of these changes do relate to aligning our language with that of the legislation, so that it does relate to subdivision. While our language might not have said that, we have not had the head of power to apply those things. And I did try and have a look while we were talking to Councillor Bastone's question about the the area. It defines the area as that goes on the final plans, so it's defined in the legislation. So hopefully that appeases some concerns.
Mr. Smee would also like to add something. Mr. Smee.
Thank you, Mayor. And I think we've got some examples from the past where we've taken public open space and it's had really poor recreational outcomes. It's been a bit of land that the developer hasn't wanted, and we've taken it and it's completely useless for public recreation, and what's more, it's costly for us to maintain because it's cliff face or whatever, covered in weeds. And we've also taken public open space where we've primarily put either a cultural heritage or a natural values hat on, and then we find that those values actually compromise what the community then want to see it developed as, which is probably a playground or a park. But it then becomes heavily constrained because our focus hasn't been primarily on the public recreation. So I guess as a council officer that looks after our recreation portfolio, I'm really confident that the changes to this policy provide the direction to staff that will lead to greatly improved outcomes in relation to the development of our public recreational assets.
Thank you, Mr. Spee. Councillor Mitchell.
Just a further question on that. So when we are, as a planning authority, and say, for example, the Channel Highway development in Taruna and the community very passionate about the public open space acquisition there, as a planning authority, can we then look at the considered where one or more of the following apply? Are we able to then bring that into our discussion as a planning authority to note that perhaps, you know, to debate that we could argue for the acquisition of the public open space or the right of way and things like that under these lists here?
Dr. Stevenson.
I believe so, because that is forms part of the conditions which form part of the recommendations that you're making a decision on. So absolutely within the purview of the planning authority to have that conversation.
Thank you. Councillor Fox, do you have a question?
No, I just wanted to say that what Mr.
Well, you've actually already spoken.
Have I spoken already? I thought I had a question on the matter.
No, I've got you down here as having spoken, but frame it in a question. I'm sure you can be creative.
Well, just to say that in my time on council, most of the situations that Mr. Smee outlined have been, I'm aware of one or two instances of them, and I'm very pleased with the changes that have been made to the policy, and I think it will work a lot better. But in future, if we want to modify the policy, can we do so?
Oh, there you go. That was a question. Well done. Dr. Stevenson.
Yes. Well, apart from the cycle of review, there would be nothing to stop a council motion, of course, outside that cycle.
Are there any further contributions? I just had two things, and they were just small typos that I picked up. On page 32, so it's on the unmarked up, so it's on the final copy, 1.1 in the third line, the word and is missing, so encourage healthy lifestyles, and it should say and create linkages between different activity nodes. And then on page 34, it's just carried over from the previous version. So in the third line of B, near the top of the page, the unimproved value, the words have run together without a space in between them. That just needs correcting. Thank you. If there are no further contributions, Councillor Westwood, would you like to sum up the debate? No, thank you. In that case, I'll put the motion, and that is that the recommendation as printed on page 26, that the amended public open space contribution policy 6.3 be approved and implemented. It was moved by Councillor Westwood and seconded by Councillor Street. All those in favour? Against? That's very polite. Thank you. And a show of hands, please. All those in favour? We have Councillors Wass, Midgley, Gladewright, Fox, Street, Bastone, Westwood and Reet, and those against, Councillor Cordova. The motion is carried. Turning now to page 36, Councillor Workshop Policy. I'm going to hand over the chair to the Deputy Mayor, Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. We have before us on page 36 a Councillor Workshop Policy. Do I have a mover for this?
Yes.
Councillor Reet, and a seconder, Councillor Street. Thank you, Councillor Reet.
Thank you. This was as a result of a notice of motion that I brought some time ago. It makes a number of changes. We already, of course, do have a councillor workshop policy that we had passed in April of this year. But on reflection, it was, I believed, lacking a few points as to how council workshops would operate. And I think largely on a whole, they have been operating well, but there were some omissions from the policy in relation to things like the timing of when they should be, But also because the workshops don't run under the local government meeting procedures regulations, there is limited scope within our existing policy to for the chair to direct how a workshop should take place, and importantly, what the expected, I guess, standards of behaviour in a workshop are for all attendees. And so I wanted to have that clarified within a policy. The other thing that it does do, and I make this point that although it's written in here, the intent is still to remain flexible within the way that our workshops operate. But it will depend very much on the presenter, if they would like to have questions during their presentation or whether they would like to have it at the end. And I do feel like that we have come to a situation where we do need to have a bit of a time frame put in there for contributions, because I can recall at least two workshops this year where there has been a councillor who has spoken for 10 minutes and then if you do the sums, then we run out of time because there's 10 of us around the table, and we have a set period from of an hour and a half that we run workshops. So I guess my intent is for very much that it allows everybody to have an equitable contribution within the workshop, and it does mean also that if you do want to follow up for a more comprehensive discussion afterwards with staff, you're of course very welcome to be able to do that, but I want an opportunity for everyone to have a chance within that time frame to have a discussion and also to ask the questions. And I think we've demonstrated that throughout the last few months, and I would hope that that would continue, but this just, I guess, provides a framework around that. So I would welcome the support of councillors for that to occur. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Reid. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor, and thank you, Mayor, for putting this forward and the staff for doing the work on this. I have a couple of questions. I don't want to get too nitty-gritty, and I understand there is flexibility in that as well. Just noting, though, 5.1.4, no decision-making or voting takes place at these meetings. Just noting at the last workshop, we did sort of have a vote and a decision at that meeting regarding a matter to go out for engagement.
We would try to get an indication of the desires of councillors around the room, and you're correct in that is the case. I guess in the matter that you're referring to, we were trying to get an indication of what the preferences were so that we could advance the matter without too much delay, because we do want to go out to public consultation on that. We're very conscious at the moment that we are 5 weeks away from Christmas break, and that council won't be meeting again. Whilst we have a meeting on the 20th of December, we then won't be meeting again until mid-January. So I think there's just this time of year some time concerns. But that's certainly not a habit that we want to be getting into, because if councillors are away from workshops, then they don't have an opportunity to be involved.
Yes. And I guess you have raised this in regards to the flexibility. So when, for example, we've had the minister here, I'll have my 20 questions and I have to try and summarise them into two. I was thinking, Mayor, that perhaps maybe if we do have the minister with a very topical debate of the fifth lane or hunting field, that perhaps there could be some emails going around where maybe we sort of group some questions or, you know, thematically maybe some things that are important to us perhaps, rather than, you know, having someone ask the 20 questions, which I think are quite valid to ask because they are really important and we need to know we have the minister, especially someone like a minister or representative like that, where there are many, many questions that we would like to ask. So maybe we can look at perhaps in the future that, it falls a bit outside this policy, but I guess they're just something that I reflected on, especially in regards to the two questions.
Thank you. And look, that I guess with that two questions, that's only intended to be a guideline. You know, I think on that particular occasion we went around so everyone could have a go and then went back around, because you gave him quite a run for his money, my recollection is. So certainly that is a good suggestion and one we might look at for bigger issues in future, so that we don't waste an opportunity while we have someone like a minister here.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Do we have any other contributions? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. In 5.1.4, 3. Councillors should confirm their attendance at least 2 business days prior to the scheduled workshop. To what end? Why is that a thing?
That's always been the case. That allows us to know, obviously, who is going to be here and allows Mrs Morton to set up the room appropriately.
Fair enough. Thank you very much.
And I believe that councillors aren't very good at RSVPing for workshops, and I'm sure Mrs Morton would appreciate it if you could do that. You will be getting an invitation before each one, and you're expected to mark your attendance, please.
Thank you. Through you, Acting Mayor, my rationale, and I'm going to move an amendment, and I'm happy to read the room, either to strike the 2 questions clause altogether or to massage it. To me, it makes no logical sense to have a blanket rule of 2 questions, because what it means, if my 2 questions are how much would this cost and how long would it take, that's my 2 questions. And then another councillor can do, like what I regularly do, ask a 35-minute long question with a massive preamble. To me, the logic would be to, if we wanted to do it this way, it would be to say that if a councillor has multiple questions after 5 minutes, the chairperson may ask the councillor to hold the remainder of their questions to the end to ensure other councillors are given a time to participate. For me, I feel like that 2 questions thing is completely arbitrary. Why not 5 questions? Why not 1? Some questions are very short, some are long. To me, the logic is that we want to constrain the time that people are talking, not the quantum of questions. I personally feel like it's becoming a bit too rigid anyway, so my preference would be to strike 5.4.2. However, I'm happy to read the room, and that wording of the amendment that I just read out about a kind of time, rather than a number of questions, a time of questions. Am I allowed to do 2 amendments? Am I allowed to test the waters for striking that 5.4.2 altogether and then foreshadow that if that doesn't work?
Do you mean 5.4.3?
I do. I apologise, but I mean 5.4.3.
Okay. And just for the record, if you did do a 35-minute preamble to a question, I reckon there'd be something I could find in here that would actually make me shut you down.
I would never.
Good example, but, you know, it might be a stretch. It's a valid point and I'm happy. I'm not trying to constrain debate here, but by the same token, I'm trying to make sure that everybody around the table gets a fair opportunity to make a contribution and ask questions. So if you want to combine if you wanted to take out 5.3 and say that, and just leave 5.44 to say that contributions at workshops, including questions, should be kept to a maximum of 5 minutes per person, that might combine the 2 things. And then you've got 5 minutes where you can either make a statement or ask a question, and then once we've gone around everyone, if you wanted to come back. And that way you could ask 5 questions in 5 minutes, or you could have a 4-minute preamble and 1 question, any combination of those.
I'm sensing that that's a good idea.
And we have some nodding.
To clarify, Councillor Cordova, would you like to propose an amendment and ask the mover and seconder if they are supportive of that amendment?
Yes, thank you, Acting Mayor. Yes, I would like to move the amendment to just combine 5.4.3 and 5.4.4 so that it reads contributions at workshops other than...
Including questions. Not that I want to put words in your mouth, but I'm just... Okay.
Contributions at workshops, including questions, should be kept to a maximum of 5 minutes, with additional questions to be accommodated at the end, if available time permits.
Yep.
I would like to keep that bit in there.
Is it 5 minutes, a maximum of 5 minutes per person?
I think that's fine. It's basically to give a head of power to the chair to constrain the debate when it becomes too long.
I'll ask the mover and seconder if they are happy with that.
I'm happy with that.
Mover, seconder, Councillor Street, are you happy with that?
Could you please put your microphone on to indicate that?
Yes, I'm happy with that.
Thank you, Councillor Street.
Thank you.
Oh, sorry, I'm not chairing the meeting.
So that now becomes... the substantive, that the workshop policy number 1.1 19 as attached to the report be approved with the amendment of combining 5.4.3 and 5.4.4 to read, contributions at workshops including questions should be kept to a maximum of 5 minutes with additional questions to be accommodated at the end if time permits. Would you like to continue your contribution, Councillor?
Thank you. No, I'm satisfied with this, but I do want to thank the Mayor for bringing this framework. I think it will help our governance and help the flow of workshops, so thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Street?
I think we've missed something.
Oh, sorry.
It's not my turn to speak, but I feel we've missed a little bit in 5.4.3. The chairperson will provide each councillor an opportunity to ask questions. That needs to be there.
Well, we'll just hear from Councillor Street and then I'll come to you, Councillor Fox, if that's all right for your contribution. Thank you. Councillor Street.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Look, I wasn't going to make a contribution on this because I think it speaks for itself, but in light of the amendment, and I have to apologise to anybody that's watching this online because this is a very inside the council chamber debate that you never see the result of because they are our internal workshops. The one thing that I wanted to say in light of the amendment was as soon as any of my colleagues treat that 5 minutes as an entitlement and an invitation to always speak for 5 minutes, I will move to amend the policy at the next meeting.
Thank you, Councillor Street. Councillor Fox.
Well, I, for my part, I think those few words that I just read out need to be in that 5.4.3 or whatever the number is going to be that replaces it, and I would prefer to keep it to 3 minutes.
Sorry, Councillor Fox, just to clarify those words that you feel we haven't included.
The chairperson will provide each councillor an opportunity to ask questions or to whatever it is we've decided they're going to do, ask questions and speak, but for a maximum of 3 minutes.
Are you proposing an amendment?
I'm just proposing that as a change, I guess, but...
I might seek some advice.
A suggestion.
How to proceed with this. Is this something that we would again ask the mover and seconder if they were comfortable with, or...
As the mover, I don't want to muddy the waters, but would it work then if we, if 5.4.3 and 5.4.4 at the start read, the chairperson will provide each councillor with an opportunity
to make
a contribution and ask questions to a maximum of 5 minutes. Does that satisfy? That's just a suggestion.
Well, that's what I was intending. Yep. That's what I was trying to do, yep. Put that back in, that phrase, but I'm wondering whether 3 minutes is better than 5 minutes, that's all.
Mover and seconder, are you happy with the proposed change by Councillor Fox? You're asking to combine 5.4.3 and 5.4.4 to read, the chairperson will provide each councillor with an opportunity to make a contribution and ask questions to a maximum of 3 minutes.
No,
is that right?
That's, including questions at the end, that is still in there.
Oh, okay.
It's just adding those words at the start.
With additional questions to be accommodated at the end, if time permits.
Okay, so as the mover, I'm happy with the first bit, but I'd rather keep it at 5 minutes, knowing that it's a bit like speed limits. That's right. You don't have to hit the 5 minutes. You can stop at three voluntarily.
You happy with that, Councillor Fox, with the amended wording?
Yes, I'm quite happy with that. Thank you.
5 minutes, okay. And seconder, you're happy with that?
More than happy.
Thank you. Councillor Fox, does that conclude your contribution?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Gladewright.
I was just going to ask, sometimes I recall the Minister responding for a long time. Is there any prompt to get short answers? We can get more questions in? Because I think that was part of the problem on that particular occasion. Or is that,
I think,
is that the way you ask the question?
Generally speaking, if we can get a minister here to talk to us, we probably want them to speak for as long as they will be happy to speak for.
That was making that process really long on that particular.
So no, I don't think. I think the answer to your question is no. Councillor Wass.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm a little bit concerned with this because I think, as someone quite rightly said before, there's 50 minutes gone. And I think if we're going to have someone come and address council, and it's a topic that we really want some detail about, after an hour of them speaking, we're going to walk out not knowing what's going on. The other part that needs to be addressed, if that's the case, that all workshops will go to 7:30. So if we're going to have everyone speak for 5 minutes, then I'll simply vote against it. I know I won't be successful in it, but I just think that's a bit overbearing that a couple of people want to speak for 5 minutes and then everyone will want to speak for 5 minutes. And then I think we wonder why we invited that person along to a workshop, and I think the answer showing them is that we want to ask them questions rather than hear what they have to say, which I think then reflects poorly upon us.
Thank you, Councillor Wass. Would you like to close, Councillor Reid?
Thank you. Thank you to councillors for their comments. Just on the last comment by Councillor Wass, it'd be highly unusual for us to have a 1 hour presentation from somebody at a workshop, and I would like to think that we could, even with pretty significant issues, that we could have probably 30 minute presentation, a well put together PowerPoint presentation that covers everything should go probably no more than about 15 to 25 minutes to allow enough discussion. So, look, I think we've got the opportunity here to be flexible. So thank you to members for their support. And, look, we can always come back to this should it not be a workable thing, but it is really... I've put this forward in the interests of, principles of good governance, but particularly to make sure that everybody around the table has an opportunity to be heard and feel that they are making a contribution. So thank you for your support.
Thank you, Councillor Reid. We have before us a councillor workshop policy moved by Councillor Reid, seconded by Councillor Street, that the updated councillor workshops policy number 1.19 as attached to the report be approved with the following amendment to combine 5.4.3 and 5.4.4 to read, the chairperson will provide each councillor with an opportunity to make a contribution to a maximum of 5 minutes, with additional questions to be accommodated at the end if time permits. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against, have a division. All those in favour, please raise your hand. We have councillors Cordova, Midgley, Gladewright, Fox, Street, Bastone, Westwood, and Reit, and those against, we have Councillor Wass. The motion is carried. I will now hand over the chair to our Mayor, Councillor Reit.
And on as well. Thank you. Thank you, Deputy Mayor. And I just need to note that Councillor Bastone left the meeting at 6:52 p.m. We move now to page 44, to the financial report, with a recommendation on page 45 that it be endorsed. Do I have a mover and a seconder, please? I have a mover in Councillor Westwood and a seconder in Councillor Midgley. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. We have before us the financial report for October 2021. The report shows that Council's forecast underlying deficit has reduced by approximately $200,000 to $345,648 as per page 8 of the financial report, page 51 of our agenda papers. I guess I'd like to note that that is an improved position. However, uncertainty still remains. Our borders are opening up on the 15th of December, and whilst every effort is being made to have as many people as possible fully vaccinated, there is, of course, uncertainty around how that might play out and the impact that any negative consequences might have on our budget. I just had one question around the CAPEX program, CAPEX expenditure, about the unexpended... excuse me for a second. Just on page 48, unexpended capital works, just a question around the trend that this is increasing and what we might forecast for expenditure of our CAPEX, $16 million by the end of the financial year, and whether there are any difficulties in getting contractors and getting this money out the door.
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. We certainly have a few larger type tenders that will come up to Council before the end of the financial year in terms of at least awarding, but we do have some problems in terms of locking some contractors in, just from a timing perspective. Even one of the ones which is generally done and dusted this time of the year, which is our resealing program, there's been delayed because of other works that Down has been tied up with state growth, so that's put a delay in that starting. That doesn't mean that they won't be achieved year end, it just means that there's a timing issue in terms of when some of these things will get spent. So we have the mid-year review that'll be coming up to Council shortly there, and there'll be some commentary based on where we think we may end up year end based on the current trend, so that'll provide a bit more information to you.
Thank you. And just to check that staff will still be running robust request for tender processes with quality submissions being assessed, and we will be ensuring that we will be requiring high quality work. Even if we have to wait for it.
Mr. Reeve.
Yeah, through you, Mayor. What we're finding is for most of our normal civil works there, we are still getting the same group of tenderers that we've had for a while, which is not unusual for councils. They tend to have a list of standard tenderers that we'll put forward for their works. So the quality side of things not so much of an issue. It's just more to do with the timing and or attracting other contractors who might want to get in the game as well.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. A question about the, and it's a really great outcome, it's fantastic that we're on track to deliver a better result than forecast. The Kingborough Sports Centre, 32k over budget. It's another great result, but why is it significantly over budget?
Mr. Smee or the Chief? No, Mr. Breen.
Yeah, through the Chair. Essentially, I think what's happening with the Sports Centre at the moment is it's generating a lot of activity, so there's the bookings are quite strong, and with that the kiosk sales are significantly stronger than expected, so I think everything's being put to maximum use at the moment. I will note that the basketball club, the Jack Jumpers, they're there for a limited period of time, and so while they're utilising the facilities, it certainly does generate additional income for us.
Great, thank you. I think I'm contributing to the kiosk sales. And I do note as well there was a double booking last week, so anyway, just a note on that in regards to my son told me that. Sorry, just in regards to the fact that he's so busy and popular that we might need to just watch those things again. Came from a child's mouth, so I do need to follow up. And just wondering about the mid-year review. So that's shortly. When exactly will that be in the new year that we'll look at that?
Mr. Breen.
Yeah, through you, Chair. No, essentially we're aiming to bring the mid-year review to the December 20 meeting. So both capital and operational expenditure will be reviewed at that time.
Are there any further questions? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. A question first about the community hub venue hire income being $39,000 over budget from the vaccination program higher income. I guess I just want a bit more information potentially, like when's the vaccination program higher set to finish, and will there be uncertainty that we should bake in the future? Is there a risk that to booking certainty for other hirers if the state government updates its plans with regards to booster shots or whatever else might happen? Is there uncertainty there that we need to factor in?
So the program has actually finished. It finished a couple of weeks ago, but Dr. Stevenson can provide you with some more information.
Thank you. Yes, through you, Mayor. The current program has finished, but we do have a number of Department of Health bookings in the new year for some three-day booster clinics, so they've already made provision for those bookings, and in our hire agreement we do have provision to make cancellation if it is for a public health directive or an emergency response, so our hirers are aware that that can happen, and we always work very hard, the team, to make changes and accommodate them in other ways. But at the moment, yes, we will certainly won't see the same level of booking and income through the vaccination clinics, but there is still some ongoing activity next year.
Thank you. And through you, Mayor, my next question is, and I realise the sensitivity around this issue, in 4.1, employee costs are $107,000 under budget, primarily due to no enterprise agreement increase being paid to date as negotiations are still underway. Are we to expect, firstly, I'd just like to hear any comment that is available, but more specifically, should we expect this to therefore be over budget next time after the negotiations are complete, and are we factoring that in, and are we prepared for that?
Dr. Stevenson.
We might do a tag team, Mr. Breen and I. I can tell you the enterprise agreement negotiations are still ongoing, and in fact there is a vote on the enterprise agreement later this week. So we will wait to see what the outcome of that is. In terms of the budgetary impact, I mean, we have budgeted for an increase, but over to Mr. Breen for the rest of that.
Mr. Breen.
Yeah, through the chair. Look, I think at this stage, if we'd paid the enterprise agreement increase, we probably would be over budget at the moment. We're seeing the same trend as we had last year, where staff leave is limited to school holidays, Christmas period, and then obviously school holidays and Easter. So my expectation would be that over the summer period, hopefully there'll be significant staff leave taken as we encourage people to have a break and get their level of leave down, which should get us to, I think we should end up at the end of the year pretty close to budget.
Thank you, Mr. Breen. Are there any further comments? If not, I will put the recommendation as printed. It was moved by Councillor Westwood. Oh, sorry, Councillor Westwood, did you want to sum up? My apologies. It was moved by Councillor Westwood and seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour? Against? The motion is carried unanimously. We turn now to page 66, nominations for community representation on the Kingborough Community Safety Committee. And the record will reflect that Councillor Street is leaving the room as he has declared a conflict of interest in this matter. I have a mover in Councillor Westwood. Do I have a seconder in Councillor Midgley? Thank you. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. I would like to move a recommendation that we appoint 7 community members of the Kingborough Community Safety Committee as follows. At A, 1, Colleen Ridge. 2, David McLaughlin. 3, Jared Code. 4, Keith Pardo. 5, Michael Brough. 6, Rod Street. 7, Tanya Flakemore. I am the current chair of the Kingborough Community Safety Committee, and I have reviewed the applications. I feel that the recommendations, as noted on our screen before us, are a good compromise between carrying forward some of the existing members and renewing the committee. It is time to renew the 2-year action plan, so that is has already kicked off and it's underway. It would be good to get some new ideas and some new faces on board. We had four current members nominate. This list includes 2 of those with 5 new community members. Open to my colleagues for discussion around this, But as the current chair, that would be my recommendation.
Thank you, Councillor Westwood. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Deputy Mayor. And in choosing these, and it's great that you've had some good number of nominations, did you give them a call and let some of the new people know about what you might discuss at the committee or what the procedures are and things like that, just to gauge some interest? And the only reason why I'm asking that is for the cycling committee. I did that, and after having conversations with them, perhaps they might have realised that I had quite a significant number of nominations. I think it was 18 or about that. I found that after discussion with them, perhaps they decide. I could evaluate whether as well, whether they were better suitable and things like that. So A, I'm wondering if you did that, and B, did you consider the location in regards to where they lived across the municipality, perhaps so you can get a diversity in regards to where they're located, to get that diversity of suburban areas across the municipality as well?
Councillor Westwood.
Through you, Mayor. No, I didn't call them. We had a total of 11 nominations, and we need to choose 7. I had thought, after speaking with you, Councillor Midgley, that would have been a good idea, but unfortunately I didn't find the time to do that. I purely assessed them on the information that they provided as part of their application. And I didn't... So I guess I'm assessing them on merit of their application versus any kind of gender diversity or spread across the municipality in terms of location.
Any further contributions? Councillor Cotover and then Councillor Gladright.
Thank you, Mayor. I thank the Deputy Mayor very much for all the work that's gone into this, and I also want to extend my thanks to the Kingborough Community Safety Committee for the excellent work that they do, and I'm very pleased that with this proposal there will be fresh ideas brought to the table. I would like to note that this is a representative safety committee that's providing advice to the council, and it's really important that they are representative, and that's why I'm going to propose an amendment. I'll provide my rationale. I will move the amendment now, and then I'll be able to speak to that amendment,
sure.
If that's okay.
Yep.
So my amendment is to replace number 6 with Kate Lucas Conningham, or Kate Lucas.
Do I have a seconder for that amendment? Councillor Midgley.
Point of order. Councillor Midgley seconded the motion.
Yes, I was just thinking that. That's why I just paused. Sorry. Councillor Gladright is seconding it. Okay, Councillor Cordover on the amendment.
Thank you, Mayor. Kingborough's population is currently 38,628. Kingborough is 52% female and 48% male, according to the ABS. Of these Kingborough residents, 7,145, or roughly 18.5%, live in Blackmans Bay. The proposal as originally brought to us, including the chair, would have had 50% Blackmans Bay residents on it. So you might as well call it the Blackmans Bay Safety Community Committee. I withdraw that, actually. I don't mean to be rude. Okay. I just think it's so important that we've got this. The population dynamics of Kingborough are important to note. Kingston actually has about 29% of the population. Blackmans Bay has about 20%, a bit less than 20%. And also we all understand the importance of having, particularly when it comes to safety, you really do want gender diversity, and you don't want to have 5 members being male and 2 members being female. I think you should strive for 50-50 split. That's personally how I feel. So we want it to be broadly representative of gender and geography, and of course we need to take into account the merits of the applicants, their experience and their wisdom, of course we do. But on this occasion I feel like if we go with the original proposal, it will be 5-2 in terms of gender split, and it won't have the proper representation, I feel, from down the channel. And so that's why I've recommended somebody from Conningham, and obviously taking into account their extensive experience. I think that kind of is... Look, ideally, from a purely representative sample, ignoring experience or qualifications, the committee would be 4 women, 3 men, 3 from Kingston, 2 from Blackmans Bay, 1 from Margate, and 1 from further down the channel or Bruny. That is if you were to have a purely representative based on population and demographic dynamics within Kingra. It's really important that we have the lived experience of people who are from other places within the community, not just Blackmans Bay. And so for those reasons, that's why I made the proposal. It is absolutely no reflection on any particular individual. Beyond that, we are very lucky to have such brilliant candidates put forward their names, and I hope that by adopting a more diverse board, we'll get newer ideas and we will benefit from that diversity and inclusion as I am proposing it. Thank you.
Councillor Gladewright on the amendment.
Thank you. I just had a question, actually. Why is it 7 and can we make it 8 and we can get that person back in?
There is that opportunity to do that.
Mm-hmm. How does that sit with the chair?
I don't have an issue with that. We can. I think it says in the terms of reference that we can
go to 8.
Yeah, we have a minimum of 7.
Mm-hmm. So can we amend the amendment or something?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Would you like to amend your amendment?
And add Kate.
Yes, that we go back to the original proposal and we add 8, Kate Lucas.
Happy with that? Okay, but we've got the amendment, so we need to deal with the amendment. We can't just ignore the fact we did have the amendment, but the amendment is now that it's adding Kate Lucas, adding in Rod Street back in. So that is what we're considering as an amended motion. So unless anyone else wants to speak on it, Councillor Fox.
Just that I'd like to speak against that amendment because I think Mr Street has been on the other committee and Tanya Flakemore also has, and they're the only two people on that committee who would provide experience and understanding of how the committee actually works. None of the other committees that we have are gender-based or geographic-based, so I don't see why this one should. And also, I feel we will be getting representatives on this committee from the bike committee as well as the access committee, so that could also help with the diversity, both gender and geographical. So I would speak against the amendment, but I would support the shadowed amendment of the amendment. Thank you.
Well, the amendment has been amended. I know that sounds like an episode out of Yes Minister, but the amendment has been amended to include Rod Street. So the amendment is that there be 8 members appointed.
My apologies, I got lost in that.
That's
process.
All right. No, okay. I'm sure nobody at home is following along either. So if there's no further... Oh, Councillor Watts, sorry.
Yes. No, you're right. Thank you, Mayor. Once upon a time, councils used to do this by secret ballot because a lot of councillors know people individually and know their background, whereas a chair can be seen of, if you like, putting in those that he or she wishes to have on that committee. I would look at a couple, and I thought of Kate Lucas as being added to it. I thought Brian Dale has been there for a long time, has worked with small and large groups, and I think even chaired it at one stage for a number of years. And Michael Hughes, no one has mentioned Michael Hughes, which was a police sergeant that has had a lot of police dealings and knows the area from a police perspective and from his own. And here we are, we're just running down, picking who we want. If that's the case, the rules should be changed and the chair should select them and just advise council accordingly. Otherwise, I think we should be choosing them ourselves. And on that basis, yeah, I speak against the motion. If you've got 7, let's have 7. If you've got 12, let's have 12. But next time we'll go, if this gets through, we'll surely go 9. And then we might go 10. So it makes a bit of a mockery, and I think we're seen from the public as being perhaps a little bit erratic on what our decisions are.
Thank you, Councillor Watts. I've been on council now 10 years and I can't remember ever voting on this privately. It's always been held in open session for as long as I have been here and with recommendations from the chair. So, Councillor Westwood, did you... No, no, no.
Can I speak on the amendment?
Oh,
Oh, sorry, you want to speak on the amendment? Yep. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you. On the amendment, I support the amendment. As the Chair, I guess my only concern with adding Kate Lucas would be that safety around schools is one of our four focus areas, which is good that she has a lot of experience in that area, but I would just want to make sure that she is she doesn't have any favouritism when it comes to this particular school that she works with, which she did mention in her application that my nomination for the committee is supported by the principal who believes it would be advantageous for the school to be represented. Ms Lucas would not be representing the school that she works at, so as Chair I'm very happy to have that discussion with her just to make sure she understands that we would welcome her experience in a schooling environment, but that she would not be representing one school, she would be representing 16. And I guess the other point to make is that I tried very hard not to let my prior experience or prior knowledge of some of the applicants influence my decision, which is why I assessed each of the applications on merit as they had been submitted, because, for example, one of the people who I have not put forth, who is a current member, I will need to ring, their application is 8 words, long-standing current member seeking membership for another term. And whilst I do know that he has an incredible background and he's very experienced and I do know him quite well, I didn't feel that I could put him up for nomination to my fellow colleagues based on 8 words when other people have gone to quite some effort to put together an application that I have assessed on merit. So I will also have that conversation with that person, but that's just to explain that I did try my very best not to have a preconceived mindset.
Thank you, Councillor Westwood. Councillor Cordova, did you want to sum up?
Thank you. Briefly to sum up, Mayor, we still... this is an improvement. It's worth noting that this is a safety committee and this is now... it will still be a male-dominated committee with 62.5%. So it will be a male-dominated committee. I think it's just worth noting that, and I think we should be really striving to get a more equal balance, but I'm really pleased that there'll be a more geographic diversity so that we can hear about some of the issues that do exist, not just in the major population centres, but also down the channel. And so we should be striving also, of course, to hear from Bruni as well. And I think that this is, this will be really good. We're very lucky in the community to have such interested and passionate people who want to participate and contribute. So thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. I'll put the amendment as printed on the screen. All those in favour? Against? Show of hands is required. All those in favour is Councillors Cordova, Midgley, Gladewright, Fox, Westwood and Reet. Those against? Councillor Wass. The amendment is now the substantive motion. Is there anybody who wishes to speak on the substantive motion? If not, I'll put the motion... which is, going backwards, is moved by Councillor Westwood and seconded by Councillor Midgley. Councillor Westwood, did you want to sum up? Thank you. All those in favour of the substantive motion as printed on the screen? All those in favour? Against? The motion is carried unanimously. We'll ask Councillor Street to come back into the room. Thank you very much. We move now to page 75, motions of which notice has been given. Councillor Midgley submitted a notice of motion headed Algona Road Funding and Channel Highway Corridor Study 2020, and it is there with an officer's response from Mr Reeve. Councillor Midgley, are you moving this motion? And seconded by Councillor Cordova. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Councillors, as we all know, we passed unanimously the Huntingfield development under our hat as a planning authority for much-needed 270 or so much-needed homes. As our hat of a planning authority, we can't debate or make road infrastructure to the best standard, to the standard for our growing municipality. But we do know that the state government does have a plan for the Algona Road separated, grade separated interchange, Kingston bypass duplication, and the works for mid-2023. A lot of the community has raised a lot of concern in regards to the increased traffic as part of this interchange, and so I put forward this motion in response really to the community concerns in regards to that. And as we know, the Channel Highway Corridor study occurred in 2020 with a number of recommended actions, so it's actually keeping some accountability to ensure that those recommended actions actually have some timelines against them and some priorities set to them. So therefore the motion is in response to that, and it's a priority that has been raised by the community. So thanks to the staff, Mr. Reeve, for having a look at this motion and the conversation with the Mayor to also put forward this, and I hope that you can support this and see this as an important matter to be raised, I guess really on behalf of what the community has raised as a concern.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. I'll just note for the purposes of the record that Councillor Street rejoined the meeting at 7:18pm. Further speakers, Councillor Cordover.
Thank you, Mayor. Briefly, I think this is a very good motion and I'm very pleased to be seconding it. I want to thank Councillor Midgley for putting it forward. These are really important developments for the community at large, and I just wanted to draw Council's attention to the Officer's response, which says that in light of other developments in the area and the findings from the Channel Highway Corridor study, it would be appropriate to ask whether the timeframes could be compressed. In addition, the Channel Highway Corridor study, released over 12 months ago, identified a number of opportunities to be pursued further, and it would be useful to understand progress with these. So I think we've got the support of staff, I hope the support of councillors, and of course in my conversations with community members there is a real appetite to see council play that advocacy function with the state government, and I'm sure that the state government will be all ears to our advocacy efforts. That is my sincere hope. So I endorse the motion, and thank you once again, Councillor Midgley. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordover. Are there any further speakers on the motion? Briefly, I just wanted to add that I support this motion, and that in anticipation of this passing tonight, I've already arranged a meeting with two of our government representatives for Franklin in Nick Street and the Honourable Jackie Petrusma to have a meeting to discuss the corridor study, the Channel Highway Corridor study ahead of this. But of course, when this motion passes, which I expect it will very shortly, we will certainly be, I will take that on board and seek the state and federal government's attention to bringing this matter forward, because only a couple of days ago a resident said to me that she tried to exit Hunting Field at about 3:15 in the afternoon and spent 18 minutes waiting at the intersection, and there was no adverse traffic event at the time other than it was school was out and it was absolute chaos. And if my experiences of taking a learner driver down there about a year ago, they're still firmly etched in my memory, because it was a very challenging roundabout to navigate and very frustrating for many road users. So we hope to have that successfully brought forward. I thank members for their contributions. Councillor Midgley, did you want to sum up? Thank you. It is the motion as printed on the screen. It is moved by Councillor Midgley and seconded by Councillor Cordover. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? The motion is carried unanimously. I forgot to mention that Councillor Westwood left the room earlier. I apologise. And she is now returned to the room at 7:22pm. Moving now to page 77, confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session. The motion is that in accordance with Regulation 15 of the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations 2015, Council by absolute majority move into closed session to consider the following items: confirmation of minutes, applications for leave of absence, and Kingborough Awards 2022. Do I have a mover and a seconder, please? Moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Glade-Wright. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. In accordance with Kingborough Council meetings audio recording guidelines policy, recording of the open session of the meeting will now cease.